Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
This is Vincent Wall with you on News Talk's Taking Stock. We're joined now by Peter Vesemann, Senior Researcher with the Military Expenditure Programme at SIPRI, the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. Peter, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, your institute has just published its regular five-year review of the arms export industry across the globe. And I suppose we should start with what might be relatively positive news that over the past 5 years to 2020, the volume of exports of arms didn't increase on the previous five-year period. That said, both of those five-year periods were at record highs in the post-Cold War period.
That is correct, yes. And the question is that all that positive? Because the problem is that this is a global figure, and on the global level, it has stabilized over those 10 years. But there are very big differences between regions and countries. So as we see a decrease in the Americas, we see some decrease also in Africa, and we see also some limited decrease in arms exports to Asia and Oceania. That is offset by increases in Europe, and particularly very much also in increases in arms exports to the Middle East. So the picture is very mixed.
Now, your review measures the volumes of exports of armaments, not the financial value. No surprise, I suppose, that the Middle East remains the principal buyer of armaments, the principal importer of foreign arms, and that Saudi Arabia in particular is the biggest individual state in that market.
That is correct. That's not something which is very surprising. Saudi Arabia already was the biggest arms importer in the previous 10 years. And of course, there is a whole range of conflicts, such as, for example, the war in Yemen, and for that matter, also the war in Libya, which feed the demands for arms in that region, but also, of course, very much existing tensions, in which particularly the tension between Iran on the one hand and Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and also Israel, for that matter, on the other hand. Or other hands, I should maybe say. And there are other tensions too. For a while, there have been very significant tensions between Saudi Arabia, the UAE, on the one hand, and Qatar on the other hand. And even though it might not be very likely that a war would erupt between those countries, the tensions were very high, and clearly must have played a role in Qatar becoming a major arms importer in the past 5 years too.
And the biggest exporter of arms to the Middle East region and to Saudi Arabia in particular, of course, is the United States. Interesting that in the last five-year period, the United States increased its market share, if I can put it that way, of global armaments exports pretty significantly from 32 to 37%. Is that a reflection to some degree, do you think, of the Trump administration, or is just that just the way the market went?
Well, the Trump administration, of course, did put a significant emphasis on arms exports as both a foreign policy tool and also as a source of income and jobs for the American industry. But this is really not something which is new in the US. Also, the previous administrations did basically the same. And when we look at the figures which we present, they are actually about deliveries of arms. So they really show the deliveries of those arms that had been ordered in most cases before 2016. So basically when the Obama administration was there. And so I think what we see is just a continuation of the US role as the principal arms supplier in the world. And as you said, the gap has increased, the role of the US has increased. That is also partly due to the fact that Russia has lost some terrain. In particular, Russia has lost some terrain in India, which still is and has been for a long time its principal arms importer. And there, Russia has actually lost terrain to France, to Israel, but for example, also to the USA.
And amongst the big five, that decline in the market share of Russia, as you point out, but also a decline in the market share of China. Is that also because it lost out on certain markets, or could it be perhaps that it's focusing on its own rearmament program first?
No, I don't think it's necessarily doing that. I think it is, just like any other country, very keen to export arms, also to be able to help sustain its own rearmament program. It always becomes cheaper if you can produce more weapons, not just for yourself, but also for someone else. Economy of scale is very important there. So they have been pushing for sure to get entry to new markets. But for China, I think a very important thing to mention is that there is a limit to the market which they can reach. China cannot sell weapons to some of the largest arms importing countries in the world, such as India, Japan, Australia, European states, the US, because none of these countries wants to have weapons from China, as most of them see China as basically a rival also in the military sphere. So that's where it stops for China. So that's, I think, where we see, after a period of significant increase in Chinese arms imports, a stagnation there. And then China has not succeeded in the one market which is big, but where other players still rule, and that is the Middle East. They have tried, but they haven't really been able to capture a significant part of that market yet.
Looking at the big five arms exporting countries, Peter, no surprise that the United States, Russia and China are there. Probably no surprise as well that France is in there, because we know France has always had a very strong export market for weapons. But I was very surprised to see Germany there in the top five, a country, for obvious historical reasons and for constitutional reasons, very reluctant to take part in multilateral peacekeeping or any other form of conflict management roles, and yet a very significant arms export industry.
Yes, that's absolutely true. So, and that's also a big difference between, let's say, France and Germany. The political culture in France has long been, and I think still is, one of strong support for the arms industry and a lot of support for arms exports. The arms industry and the French government go hand in hand when they sell arms. In Germany, the discussion is very different. There's a lot of skepticism, and arms exports are often discussed, debated in parliament, in civil society. There are controversial deals which get a lot of attention. And still, yes, Germany has an arms industry which is advanced, and particularly a niche areas, it really is, you could say, top of the range. And then there are sufficient countries which are not considered that controversial that restrictions should be in place. Now, Germany has put restrictions on arms exports to the most important arms importing country in the world, Saudi Arabia. So it doesn't really export weapons to that country. But I think there are plenty of other examples where you might be surprised to see that Germany is a significant supplier of arms. Countries which are not necessarily that democratic, or where there are other concerns about human rights or about the way these countries use arms within the country, or may threaten others. And I think that the prime one at this point in time is Egypt, which has become a major recipient of German naval equipment, submarines and frigates. But for example, also Algeria is on that list.
Very interesting. And Germany now, with more than 5% of the global export market. To my surprise, I would have thought that the UK would have been in the top five, but their arms exports have been slipping. I presume that's not a deliberate policy. It's just that they're losing out on the world market for some reason.
No, that's absolutely not a deliberate policy on the side of the UK. They try very hard to find markets for the broad diversity of weapons that is on offer from the UK arms industry. For a long time already, basically almost since the 70s and certainly since the 80s, Saudi Arabia has been the principal market for weapons from the UK arms industry. Combat aircraft, ships, a whole range of other things are included there. And those have involved again and again relatively big contracts. But right now, no such big contract is in place. There were some plans on the side of Saudi Arabia to buy more combat aircraft in addition to a significant number that had been ordered about 10 years ago and of which deliveries have ended now. But they haven't yet. And so there is a gap, or potentially it might even be a structural thing. And it is interesting to see that the UK is, as you say, slipping away as a major arms supplier. It is clearly behind Germany and France, and it is getting more and more, on the same level as Italy or even Spain.
And Israel, indeed.
And Israel is also a country which, over the past few decades, has really climbed up as a major arms supplier. Israel is a country that has certain niches again, where it's particularly important: radars and missiles and unmanned aerial vehicles are important to mention there. And we also shouldn't forget that there is one other country that has seen a very significant increase in arms exports that is now really among the, let's say, established arms suppliers in the world, and that is South Korea, which I think is not very surprising considering the enormous development in the South Korean industry in general. But I can say that also the arms industry there has now, let's say, caught up with the civilian with the civilian industry and really is now amongst the most competitive arms suppliers in the world, competing even in Europe with European arms suppliers.
Interesting. Our guest here on News Talk is Peter Wiesemann from the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. Peter, to what degree can you support the accuracy of your findings? I assume there's quite a significant invisible or distorted market in armaments exports. How accurate do you think your data is?
Our accurate is a rough estimate. Let's be very honest about that. We use a very specific methodology in which we try to overcome the fact that quite often, especially when it comes to arms contracts signed with Russia and China, but also in a number of other cases, the actual values, the actual financial values of those deals are not known. So we have a particular system which we use to overcome that. And that makes that the data, the statistics are an estimate. And of course, as you say, there are also cases where weapons are transferred without we really knowing exactly how many in total and also in which years. So we have to make a lot of estimates there. I have to add, however, that we therefore look at those weapons which are most visible, the ones which are most easy to count, the ones which are most easy to identify: major arms, the tanks, the combat aircraft, the major ships are the most important ones there. So yes, you have to take these figures with a certain level of carefulness. And we have to also agree that often enough, and particularly in combat and in conflict regions, we might not be able to really establish what happens exactly. Take, for example, in Syria, we have very little information there. We still have indications that, surprisingly enough, despite the long war there, it has not been a major importer of arms. That might be because we have missed some information, but overall we still believe that roughly that is a good estimate anyway.
And over the various periods of your reviews, Peter, what have been the main considerations in one country buying from another? Has it been, broadly speaking, political or ideological relationships at any particular time? Has it often been a kind of a reciprocal trade agreement that one country sells food or IT equipment, the other country buys arms back? Or is it down to price frequently?
I think it's a broad diversity of factors, also depending very much on which country we talk about. For the US, it is quite clear that in many cases, arms transfers are considered a foreign policy and security tool. We can see that in the first place when the US supplies weapons for free, when it gives weapons away to, in the first place, Israel, also to Egypt, to countries like Jordan. In the past, it has done that with Pakistan too, though that has changed. We can also see it, for example, in the case of the relationship between the US and Turkey. In that case, we see that Turkey had ordered a significant number of F-35 combat aircraft, the most advanced combat aircraft that the US is willing to export. And that was a very significant deal, also in money terms. And still, when Turkey decided to also turn to Russia to acquire air defense systems, the US said, OK, that is now for us reason to stop that very large, in economic terms, deal. So they really used an important, significant deal there as part of their foreign policy towards Turkey. But I think it's very different from case to case. For Russia, for example, it seems as if arms exports in general are basically an economic trade. You sell arms to make direct revenue, either in the form of hard currency or, as you already mentioned, in the form of some form of barter trade. China, it's probably more mixed. There are indications that China's arms exports to, for example, African states clearly are also have also the function of cementing the ties with countries that have significant natural resources, which might be very important for the Chinese industry. And so you can give examples in all those cases. France is a good example of a country which also seems to put economic reasons first and only in some cases, primarily in smaller deals and smaller military aid deliveries, puts arms exports as a foreign and security policy tool first.
Fascinating, if slightly worrying, market, and good to have somebody keeping an eye on it. That's Peter Wiesemann, senior researcher with the Military Expenditure Program at SIPRI, the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. Peter, thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
Taking stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.